I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, where we're at and where we're going. We're coming close to being here 2 full years. And as I've had a lot of conversations, and as I've worked with the boards and next Sunday school board, and as we're beginning to really shape up about what God would want us to do, I think we've come to agreement, though, about what the vision for the church should be, or what God is asking us to do. Now, we've talked about sitting down and really putting, you know, this into a concise statement, but we haven't done it yet, because every time that I think now's the time to do it, God just kind of pokes me a little bit and says, well, just hold off a little bit. But the other day, I was thinking to myself, I think God is saying that if anything else, He wants us to be a church where everyone can come, where everyone can grow, and everyone can thrive in relationship with God and people. I really think that Mary Lee had put that. I had talked to her a little bit about that recently. And I talked to her, you know, and she put it in the bulletin. She put in that we desire to be a church where everyone could come and everyone could thrive and everyone can grow in relationship with God and others. It's kind of, you know, a little rewording of the great commandment. And one of the things I've been thinking about is, who is that everyone, right? So we were walking, or I was with Larry yesterday. Has anybody ever had a chance to hang out with Larry Lachom for a day or so? Has anybody ever been able to do that? Vicky has. Well, Larry and I, we kind of spent most of the day together yesterday, and we really had a good time, and it was an awesome time. But, you know, yesterday was SUNY Potsdam's graduation, so he says, hey, we better go uptown. We needed to go uptown to get something to eat. He said, we better go now, because traffic is really going to get crazy in a few minutes, so we better go. So we started heading out to go to lunch, and traffic was crazy. And it took forever to get through town just to go to Burger King. But we thought, you know what we should do? We should post on Facebook. We should say the traffic in Potsdam is terrible, and it's Donald Trump's fault. Because, you know, Donald Trump's to blame for everything lately, right? So we thought, and then we decided, well, maybe we better not do that. I just put it in my sermon the next day. So we ended up going to lunch, and as we're coming back, some of the graduates were beginning to come out down the sidewalk. And Larry sees this young girl, you know, or a college graduate, in her cap and in her gown, and she was walking along reading, you know, her diploma, we assumed, and she was all by herself. And Larry said, man, that's sad. Because we don't know her story. We didn't know where she was going, but he thought, you know, isn't this a time where maybe moms or dads or brothers and sisters should be walking with that girl, celebrating one of the biggest moments of her life, graduating college. And we understand that we didn't know where she was headed, but it just struck him. And then it struck me, and you know what? I couldn't get that out of my head, so thanks, Larry, for pointing that out to me, because I couldn't get that girl out of my head. I'm wondering, you know, what really was her story? Why was she alone at one of the biggest moments of her life? And then I got thinking, is she like the everyone that we're talking about, right? Who is this everyone? Do we as a church, when we say everyone, do we mean everyone, or do we mean just everyone who kind of fits into our little box, our little idea of who everyone is? So when we're talking about a vision statement, and we say, hey, we desire to be a church where everyone can come, grow, thrive in relationship with God and people, what do we mean by everyone? It's important for us, loved ones. When we say everyone, maybe we should say everyone and anyone. Maybe we should say everyone and anyone, no one excluded. How often do we have to qualify that? Because I know we are people, and I'm a people too. And my everyone doesn't always include everyone or anyone. I believe that the vision that God has for us as a church would be that everyone, red, yellow, black, and white, become part of this fellowship and this be a safe place where they can come and they can grow and they can thrive in relationship with God and people. You know, I read this story recently about a husband and wife who were embroiled in this heated argument. And he said to her, "I suppose I must admit that I do have my faults." And he remarked this in a tone that was far from humble. "Well, yes," the wife snapped back, "and in your opinion, your faults are better than other people's virtues." And so as we begin to talk today, I thought about calling this sermon, you know, "Are you an innie or an outie?" And I'm not talking about belly buttons, okay? But then I put on their compass check, and maybe it's both. Maybe it's time for us today, right now, to check our compasses. You know, what is our direction? Are we a church where everyone can come, grow, thrive in relationship with God and others? So are we looking out, right? Or are we focused in? So I want to talk to you a few things about today about this. And as we take our compass check, and the first slide says this: inward-focused people must point out their accomplishments and their talents. Philippians 2:3 says this: "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself." So if we're focusing inward or we're focusing outward, you know, what are we really looking at? Because then inward-focused people tend to focus on the outward struggles of others. Galatians 5:12 says, "I only wish that those troublemakers who want to mutilate you by circumcision would mutilate themselves." You know what Paul's saying there is that there was this trouble going on in the church where people wanted, you know, where Christians wanted people to become Jews before they become Christians. So there was all kinds of pressure, you know, and it was all kinds of troublemaking, wanting these people to become circumcised simply before they could become Christians. And Paul's saying it's all about a relationship with God. It's about what's in here. And in here, it's not about your body. It's not about what you wear. Inward focus people focus on the outward struggles of others. Now, as we take a compass check, we realize that inward focused people have fun talking about their wisdom while exhibiting false humility. James 3:14 reminds us, "But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth, because that is the worst kind of lie." And then inward-focused people seem to stir up problems around them. Listen to what James 3:16 says, "For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and every kind of evil." And I want to tell you a story today about a young girl named Shaylin. Shaylin was 15 or 16 years old, and she had a beautiful voice, you know, like Ember does. And she had this beautiful voice, and she lived in Marysville, Kansas. But she was asked to come up to a church in Nebraska to sing a special. So it was like a 50-mile drive. So Shaylin, she got dressed, and she made that drive from Marysville, Kansas to come up to the church. And when she got to the church, they were beginning to practice. You know, they were practicing her special that she was going to sing. And she took a lot of care in the way she put her makeup on, the way she combed her hair, the dress that she decided to wear. And she gets to the church and she starts to practice, and her voice was beautiful. So people came in and were beginning to listen. They wanted to hear this more than once. And as she was singing, she was standing behind a pulpit. And now this church there had this pulpit that was huge. And as a matter of fact, I would have to really stand on a milk crate just so people could see me over this. So she had this big, huge pulpit that she was singing, but and everything was going great. And she finished practicing and she stepped out, and there was a gasp because several of the people there said, "Hey, that dress is too short. You know, her dress is like here. That's not appropriate to wear in this church." So they said, "Hey, we got to do something about this." What do? They went and got the pastor. So they grabbed the pastor and they say to him, "Hey, man, that girl, she's got to do something different about that. We don't like that outfit she has on." So then the pastor got all nervous. He went and talked to her and he said, "You know, you're either going to have to go home and change that dress or you're not going to be able to sing today." Well, she came from Marysville, Kansas. And she looked beautiful. And you know what she did? She started crying, obviously. All of her preparation, all of her care. And she got up and she left that church. And she vowed never to darken the doors of the church again. And her mom followed her out the door. And her dad followed her out the door, and her sister followed her out the door, and her sister's two little kids followed her out the door. Inward focused people seem to stir up problems all around them. But I want to tell you about the bottom line. The bottom line is simply this: inward focused people do things then that push people away. And today, we're asking, are you an innie? Or are we an outie? But there's good news here today, because I want to talk about outward focused people, okay? So we got the bad news a little bit, but let's talk about outward focused people. And listen to this: outward focused people have a larger view of their world. It's not all about one big pulpit in the center of a church. Outward-focused people have a larger view of their world. Listen to what John 11:52 says. It was a prediction that Jesus' death would be not for Israel only, but for the gathering together of all the children of God scattered around the world. I'm going to tell you something. There's people walking around in the darkness, and you know them. The other day, I got the map out of northern New York. I put a dot, boom, right at Potsdam. You know what that dot represented? You. This place. The Potsdam Church of the Nazarene. So then I started looking on that map. Let's see where the next Nazarene church is. I looked all over St. Lawrence County, and you know what? There wasn't one other Nazarene church in all of St. Lawrence County. So I said, where is the next one? Well, you know, it might be a tie in distance. There's one in Plattsburgh, and there's one over in Watertown, Watertown Life. There's one in Wilmington, right? I don't know how far that is. All I know is it's a long way. And there's one in one real close to Whiteface Mountain, which is Wilmington, and then there's another one in that area, in the Tupper Lake type area, or farther south. I'm trying to think, Lake Placid area. I'm sorry. And then there's a plant in Lake Placid. So think of that area, right? The only Nazarene church the neat thing about the Church of the Nazarene is we have this holiness emphasis that I think is so important that the world is missing today. So I thought to myself, you know, Lord, what is our responsibility here? Do we just keep going on as the Potsdam Church of the Nazarene, or do we kind of like look out and we say, hey, I wonder if there's people up in Messina that just might want to have a Bible study there? Or what about in Ogdensburg? You know, where is the holiness representation there? What about, you know, Canton? Well, they got us. What about Norfolk? Yeah. I mean, have you ever looked at the map and seen how big St. Lawrence County is? If I'm not mistaken, isn't it the largest geographical county in the state of New York? East of the Mississippi. Well, let's not get in an argument over this. It's okay. But what's our responsibility? See? What can we do to make a difference? Well, we could try to take all of our money and all of our resources, and we could try to plan a traditional brick-and-mortar church, say in Messina, or some other place. Or what about just trying something organic? Where really the investment is just simply being willing to go to somebody's house and have a Bible study. What kind of influence can we be if we're an outwardly focused group of people that have a larger worldview than the corner of 72 and 56? I think God is doing something in my heart, and I'm going to be talking about it to see if God is doing something in your heart. And you know what? I'm thinking of this young couple that moved up from Florida last year. And he was part of the Coast Guard, I think. And they come to church for a little while. They had two little kids, and Cindy and I took them out to dinner, but they were like in Messina and farther out than Messina, but they thought, it's just so hard for us to get here. We're gonna have to find a place that we can fit into here in this area. And I was thinking of them. And I'm wondering, hey, if their needs have been met, and shame on me for not calling them and saying, hey, have your needs been met? But it's never too late. And maybe something organic could begin to grow. What if we begin to think outwardly? You know what? God would bless those areas there. But I'm telling you, if we give our time, talent, and things to something of God, then you know what? He's going to bless us here. We won't have to worry about any of those things. You see, because outward-focused people have a larger view of their world, and outward-focused people realize that others must see their lives changed by Jesus Christ. See, so as we're out and we're thinking of these things, and as we're visiting with people, looking outward, visiting people a little bit different than we are, those people are going to see how our lives have been changed by the presence of Jesus Christ, and they're going to say, hey, I want that too. Tell me more about Jesus. John 10:16 says, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. Outward-focused people realize that others must see their lives changed by Jesus Christ. In the late 19th century, there was this brilliant student of theology, and his name was William Kelly. Now, his spirituality and his scholarship made him a powerful advocate for God in England. And he had once helped a relative prepare for Trinity College in Ireland, and because this guy was so scholarly, it attracted great attentions by the professors there and the deans there. And they thought so highly of him that they insisted that he take a position at the college and thus distinguish himself. Well, Kelly, he turned down their offer, and they were confused and they were unsure how to react. And one of them asked him in complete exasperation, but Mr. Kelly, aren't you interested in making a name for yourself? To which, you know, Kelly cleverly replied, you know, my name to who? You see, others must see how one's life has been changed by Christ because of the bottom line. And the bottom line is this: outward-focused people do things that bring people together through love and never do things that drive people away. Our text today, I bet you were wondering if I was ever going to get to the text. It's 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 7, and then verse 13, where it says this: if I speak in tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy, and if I can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. And then Paul says these 15 things. He says, love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but it rejoices at the truth. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And then he says, love never fails. But then he says this, you know, when Jesus comes back again and all things pass away, time comes to an end, there's still going to be three things that remain: faith and hope and love. But then he says this, the greatest of these things is love. The outward-focused people find ways to love and to bring people together, not push people away. I want you to listen to the words of a taxi cab driver. This is how we're going to conclude this sermon. Because I drive the night shift, my cab often becomes a moving confessional. Passengers climb in and sit behind me in total anonymity and tell me about their lives. Says I encounter people whose lives amaze me, ennoble me, make me laugh, and sometimes make me weep. But none touched me more than a woman I picked up one late August night. Responding to a call from a small brick fourplex in a quiet part of town, I assumed I was being sent to pick up some partygoers or somebody who had just had a fight with a lover or a worker heading to an early shift at some factory in the industrial part of town. I arrived at 12:30 a.m. and the building was dark except for a single light in a ground floor window. Now, under these circumstances, many drivers would just honk once or twice and then drive away, but I had seen too many impoverished people who depended on taxis as their only means of transportation. So unless the situation smelled of danger, I always went to the door. Now, this passenger might be someone who needs my assistance, I reasoned to myself. So I walked to the door and I knocked. Just a minute, came the frail answer. And after a long pause, the door opened. And a small woman in her 80s stood before me, and she was wearing a print dress and a pillbox hat with a veil pinned on it, like somebody out of a 1940s movie. The apartment looked as if no one had lived in it for years. All of the furniture was covered with sheets. There were no clocks on the walls, no knickknacks or utensils on the counters. And in the corner was a cardboard box filled with photos and glassware. Would you carry my bag out to the car, she asked. And I took the bags, and then I turned to assist her. She took my arm, and we walked slowly towards the curb, and she kept thanking me for my kindness. Well, it's nothing, I told her. I just try to treat my passengers the way I would want my mother treated. Oh, you're such a good boy, she said. When we got to the cab, she gave me the address, and then she asked, can you just drive me through downtown? Well, it's not the shortest way, I quickly answered, and she said, oh, I don't mind. I'm in no hurry, because I'm on my way to hospice. The doctor says that I don't have very long. And I quietly reached over and I shut off the meter. Well, what route would you like me to take? I asked. And so for the next 2 hours, we drove through the city, and she showed me the building where she had once worked as an elevator operator. We drove through the neighborhood where she and her husband had lived when they were newlyweds. She had me pull up to the front of a furniture warehouse that had once been a ballroom where she had gone dancing as a young girl. Sometimes she'd ask me to slow down in front of a particular building or on a corner and would just sit and stare off into the darkness, saying nothing. As the first hint of sun was creasing the horizon, she suddenly said, I'm tired. Let's go now. Well, we drove in silence to the address that she had given me. And two orderlies came out to the cab, and as soon as we had pulled up, they were solicitous, and they were intent, and they were watching her every move. They must have been expecting her. I opened the trunk, and I took the small suitcase to the door, and the woman was already settled into a wheelchair. "Well, how much do I owe you?" she asked, reaching into her purse. "Nothing," I said. "Well, you have to make a living," she answered. And I said, "There'll be other passengers." And almost without thinking, I bent over and I gave her a hug, and she held on to me tightly. She said, "You gave an old woman a little moment of joy. I squeezed her hand, and then I walked into the dim morning light. Behind me, a door shut, and it was the sound of a life closing. Well, I didn't pick up any more passengers that ship. I drove aimlessly, lost in thought. For the rest of that day, I could hardly talk. What if that woman had gotten an angry driver, one who was impatient to end his shift? What if I refused to take the run or honked once and then had driven away? I don't think that I've done anything more important in my life than give that old woman a ride. See, loved ones, for some reason we have this thing in our lives. We have this idea that our lives only have meaning in the great moments. See? But great moments often catch us at the most obscure of moments, wonderfully hidden in what most people consider small, meaningless moments. So I guess what I'm asking you today is to consider, where do your great moments lie? Do they lie inside, or they lie outside? May God wonderfully bless His Word today as we take a compass check and we consider, are we in any?